present the 8th episode of Pay Any Price by Ted Albury, which he's adapted from his novel of the same name. With Barry Foster as Jimmy Boyd and Robert Beatty as Otto Schultz. Pay Any Price.
Ansel here.
This is Boyd. Did you get any more information on Debbie Shaw?
Yes. She's held under the Mental Health Act 1959, Section 72. That means she's no longer a voluntary patient. They can keep her in there as long as they want, and nobody. Parents, husband can get her out. Only the Home Secretary himself could get her released.
How do they do that?
Two doctors certify that she is mentally ill and needs to be held in a mental institution for her own safety and the safety of the general public.
You mean two doctors can just put somebody into a mental hospital and nobody can appeal?
Nobody can appeal. But in the first place, somebody would have to make the application for her to be detained.
Who could do that?
If she was an offender, a magistrate's court or another court could issue an order, or some other official or official body could apply.
Is there any indication of who applied in this case?
Yes. The application was applied for by the Home Secretary's office.
What? What? What's it got to do with him?
That's just the official channels. The Home Office could offer a dozen reasons that would be accepted. There's something wrong with all this, you know, Boyd.
Yeah.
It stinks.
Yeah, yeah. Of what?
Of you and your people, the establishment. A cover-up. Something sinister.
It's not me or my people, I can assure you. I desperately want to talk to her, and the hospital have point-blank refused to even let me see her.
Well, that's all very well, but this girl went in there as a voluntary patient. No Section 72, no nothing. She could walk out any time she wanted. I hear about her. They're going to send me all the medical notes. I tell you, my friend.
Mm.
2 days later, I get the notes, and the next day, the very next day, she's a Section 72 patient.
Yeah.
It's too much to swallow, Boyd. Either you're playing games or someone else's, but I ain't gonna join. Just count me out.
Can I see the notes?
I suppose so.
Mm.
If I refuse, you'll get them some other way. But there's very little in them for you. It's mostly medical tests.
Can you send a copy to my home address?
If that's what you want.
Thanks. How's George Walker?
No.
Hmm?
You don't get me helping on that one. There's not going to be any Section 72 dropped on him. Only over my dead body.
Ansel, look, I'm investigating what's happened to your patient. Believe me, we're both on the same side. If you can find out more about who ordered the detaining of the girl, I'll look into it.
I can tell you who ordered it, Boyd.
Right.
Salmon and the other doctor were leaned on, heavily, virtually threatened. The application was from the Foreign Office. A guy named Carter signed it. It was passed to the Home Office,
Carter?
And they just rubber-stamped it through the system. Do you get the message now?
Yeah.
Either the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's up to, or you're playing games with me as well as with the girl.
It's not me playing games, Ansel. I'll start checking on it.
You didn't sound surprised.
Nothing surprises me, none anymore. I've been at it too long. But I still need your cooperation.
I'll send you a copy of the medical notes.
Good.
After that, I'll need a lot of persuading.
What? Oh.
CIA Langley, can I help you?
Extension 2971, please.
One moment, please. Schultz.
Hi, Otto. Boyd, SIS.
Hi, Jimmy. Where are you?
I'm in London.
You coming over?
No, but I need some information off the record.
Go ahead.
Look, I've got two cases I'm investigating. Both concern people who may have been used under hypnosis for intelligence work. Now, one of them's a girl. She was given a phone number to ring in Washington if she ever needed a doctor and was told to ask for a Joe Spellman. The number was Washington 240-1429. A boyfriend dialed this number, and whoever replied said it was CIA Langley. Now, when he asked for Joe Spellman, they hung up. After some palaver with the White Plains operator, she said there was no such number listed. And it certainly wasn't CIA Langley or the office on Pennsylvania Avenue. Eh? Now, could you do a check on that number for me?
Sure. Any chance it was a wrong number?
Oh, it could be, but I don't think so.
I'll see what I can ferret out.
Otto, could you keep this to yourself?
What's bugging you?
I don't know. It's just a feeling in my bones.
Okay. How's the beautiful Katie?
Fine. You and yours okay?
Yeah, they're fine. I'll come back to you.
It was 3 days before Schultz called me back, and I could hear something was wrong.
That query you raised with me, how far do you want to go with it?
I don't understand.
Well, let's say it's kind of complex.
Ah, that means the number was for real.
Well, it's for real, all right, but it's not in my area.
Well, can you pass me on to whoever's responsible?
There's problems involved in doing that.
Like what?
Like trouble.
For you or for me?
Both of us, I guess.
I'm being dumb, Otto. I haven't got the message.
Well, let me ask you a question. Are you going to carry on these investigations no matter what?
Of course.
What if you were told to lay off?
Nobody's going to suggest that, Otto.
Don't be too sure. The ice is very thin at this end. Maybe I should come over and talk with you. How about that?
That would be fine. You sure it's necessary?
I'm sure, all right. When can you fit me in?
As soon as you can make it.
Tomorrow?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll be on Concord.
I'll meet you.
Great. See you.
I stood watching as Schultz came through Immigration and Customs. He looked more like a farmer than a senior officer of CIA. His family were farmers, or had been until oil came to Olney, where their 500 acres became the next best thing to a gold mine. They still ran several hundred steers on the land, but it was more from cussedness than necessity. Otto, the eldest of three sons, had practiced as a lawyer in Austin for 3 years before he was lured into the CIA.
Hiya, Jimmy. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, too. I've got the car outside.
Is it parked okay?
Yes, why?
I'd like to have a talk with you here before we get onto an official basis.
Well, let's have a meal in the restaurant.
Oh, fine. Whatever you say.
Well, tell me what all the song and dance is about, Otto.
Well, now look, this part's just between you and me. Off the record completely. Not to be repeated. Or I'll swear I never said a word out of place.
Mm-hmm. Sounds grim.
Maybe you hit the right word there, pal. Anyway, let me give you the picture. I checked on your number very discreetly and got nowhere. It didn't exist. I dialed it myself, and it didn't answer or even ring. So I probed a bit deeper. Did you ever meet a guy named Grabowski while you were over with us?
Yeah, I remember the name, but I'm not sure I met him. It rings a bell. I've got an idea. He was an observer down at Camp Peary when I was there on a visit.
That's the guy. Mm. Well, no. Grabowski is CIA and a senior man. About the same level as me, but he's got a lot more clout than I've got. In certain directions, anyway. And that's because of his job. I hate the description dirty tricks, but that's Grabowski's job.
Oh.
If CIA top brass wants something doing that's unconstitutional or illegal, they just nod to Grabowski. If anything comes out, it's Grabowski who gets chopped. Nobody higher up could be blamed because they didn't give him any orders or do anything naughty.
He's a kind of fuse. He blows, but the circuit stays intact, right?
Right. Mm. Now, your Washington telephone number is one that's used by Grabowski's mob. One of many all around the country. I did some checking with a pal of mine in communications, and in fact, it's one of a couple of dozen numbers that aren't even controlled by the CIA. They're controlled by a special high-security team from Fort George Meade, the National Security Agency. These numbers have all sorts of uses that vary from time to time, depending on what's going on behind the scenes with Grabowski. I spent 28 solid hours checking what your particular number was used for. And I wish I hadn't.
You'd better tell me, Otto.
Well, and remember what I'm saying. I can't prove this, and if I could, I'd end up in the river. That number was a last resort contact for the Mafia in the 6 months before John F. Kennedy was assassinated. A last resort contact with the CIA.
What?
There's no record I can find of the traffic on that line, but there is a phone log in the archives that shows that, last resort or not, it was in constant use from June 1963, rising to a peak in November of that year after the president was killed. Then the number lay more or less dormant until early May in 1968. Bobby Kennedy was killed in L.A. in June 1968. And since that event, that particular number has hardly carried a couple of dozen calls. Are you getting the drift of all this, my friend?
Yes. But what's it got to do with my problem?
I'm coming to here, but with an emergency number as important as that, the technicians put in a switching device. It has a list of numbers and sequence of importance that incoming calls are switched to if there's nobody manning the main number. Anybody on that line has a separate telephone that responds to that number only. You can't even make outgoing calls on it, so that it's always free. It was obvious by then that I wasn't going to get anywhere with a straight inquiry, so I called in some old debts that were owing to me, and I got the list of all those alternative numbers. The first was Grabowski's.
Yeah.
The second was one of Grabowski's senior men named Costello. The third was a CIA doctor named Simmons, a psychiatrist. The fourth was a CIA doctor named Peterson, also a psychiatrist. Now, I then did another piece of checking. I got a list from the Pentagon of dates and places where this Debbie Shaw performed.
Mm-hmm.
In a period of about 18 months, Simmons was at the same camp as she was on 12 occasions. I moved over to immigration records, and the printout shows that she came in and out of the States at least four times after she ceased to be a performer. And that's it, friend. That's how it is tonight, as Cronkite says.
Well, what do we do, Otto? Where do we go from here?
Well, if I had any sense, I'd catch the next flight out of here and go fishing for a month.
I'm wondering if one or both of those psychiatrists could be something to do with what's happening over here. See, a soldier and this girl have been used under hypnosis in the last 2 years. The girl has been used in the last 4 months. I'm almost certain of that.
Mm-mm.
Well, it can't be a coincidence that the guy you mentioned, Simmons, was at the camps when she was 12 times. It's too often.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Well, you know what I'm driving at.
Maybe, but I want you to say it, not me.
This guy, Simmons, is the direct connection. He can tell us what's been going on. He needn't talk about any of the U.S. aspects, just the U.K.
You don't actually think he'll talk, do you?
Why not?
You realize what he's been involved in?
More or less.
Oh, I don't think you do, James. But I guess that's understandable. I've already tried to trace Simmons and Peterson. So far as CIA records are concerned, they don't exist.
But you said you checked on the army camps where he and the girl had been.
I also said that those were Pentagon records. It was an accident that those existed, but the CIA obviously don't realize that they do.
Mm.
They weren't operational records, but nominal rules so that rations and allowances could be drawn for officers and men accommodated to the camp. Routine administration. If he'd been a civilian on a camp, his name would still have gone onto the rolls. But he's not on CIA records anymore, not even the confidential ones. Why? Because he's been stashed away somewhere. We've got dozens of official committees from the Senate downwards still investigating the Kennedy murders, and private investigation committees by the score. Journalists, broadcasters, private citizens, they're all in the Kennedy industry. It's my guess they daren't leave Simmons around for anyone to question.
Why not?
Oh, for God's sake, Jimmy. His name's third on a switch list for a secret telephone number for the sole use of the mob and the CIA. Isn't that enough?
He was part of an assassination plot.
I'm not saying anything, my friend. You read the books, draw your own conclusions, but don't tell me and don't ask me mine.
So why tell me all this if I can't use it?
I didn't say you can't use it. I just said you can't tell anybody else, no matter who they are, what I've told you. How you use it, it is up to you.
Are you disturbed by all this, Otto?
I'm angry. I'm outraged by it. But I ain't going to do a thing.
Why not?
Because I'm scared.
Well, thanks for putting me in the picture. Have you told anybody your end?
Nope, not a soul. And it wouldn't last 2 days.
You sure it's as rough as that?
Quite sure. And if you're wise, you'll take the same view. Have you told anyone I was coming over?
No.
Katie?
Nobody at all.
Good. I'll go straight back tonight, then. There's a flight in about an hour. I'll stay on my own. There'll be people around who might recognize me, and I can lie that one away, but not if they see me with you.
Well, if you do get any more information, you'll pass it on to me, right?
Maybe. I don't promise I will. Oh, one last thing. I suggest that nothing about your investigation is passed to your liaison officer at Langley, and nothing goes in the routine exchange of information summary.
Mm-hmm.
You can start them off if anybody read the damn thing and it rang a bell. And remember, if they do go for you, it won't be just the heavy boys, but top brass will have given their blessing. Now, don't imagine for a moment that you can debate the rights and wrongs with them. For them, there will be only one right, and that will be you, dead. There's too much at stake for them to do anything else, even if it meant knocking off 100 people instead of just one.
But at least half a dozen people must know right now.
More than that, pal. Far more than that. But they've all got a heavy investment in forgetting what's happened. If you're wise, you'll join them. Tell your boss that it's a dead end and you're wasting funds and time.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks a lot, Otto. I'll remember what you said. It was midnight when I got back to the flat. And Katie had waited up for me. There were three paintings propped up along the front of the sofa. They were arranged so that I would see them as soon as I came in. I closed the door and leaned back against it, looking at the paintings. They were of the creeks around Chichester, Bosham, Itchenor, and Del Quay. Thick but smooth impasto done with a palette knife. Long, tapering masts that took your eyes up to the solid blue skies, and foregrounds that reeked of mud and mosses cradling the hulls of rotting dinghies and converted lifeboats. I turned and saw her standing at the bedroom door, smiling. Smiling at my interest and smiling with her own pleasure of knowing that the paintings worked.
They're beautiful, Katie.
Do you really like them?
They're beautiful. Wonderful how you've given them movement. The boat's just, you know, moving on the water. And the breeze in the reeds, and the sky like you're lying on deck on your back.
Two are sold already.
Oh, which two?
That's for you to decide. One's for you.
Ah.
Whichever one you prefer.
Ooh, well, the one at Bosham.
I knew you'd choose that one. Have you eaten?
Yeah.
Well, let's have a drink to celebrate my sales.
Yeah.
You're tired, James.
Hmm? Oh, so-so.
You look tired, or something.
Yeah, it must be something.
You look a bit down. Everything okay?
Well, it's never really okay, my love. We only get what's not okay, and when we've made it okay, we start on another new shambles. Oh, thanks.
Healy phoned.
Huh?
And said it was nothing important. He's a bit of a flirt, your Healy, you know. Why hasn't he ever married?
Oh, he has. He married a Stradivarius violin when he was about 16.
How long are you staying this time?
I'm not sure. At least another 2 days.
You sure there's nothing wrong?
What's worrying you?
You. Oh. You seem far away these last 2 days, as if you weren't really here. I've seen you worried before, but not like this.
Won't be much longer, Katie.
So you are worried?
Yeah, I guess so.
Can you tell me, even vaguely?
No. Oh, I wish I could.
Let's go to bed.
I couldn't sleep, and at 6 I got up, dressed and shaved, and left the flat. I wandered round the streets until I thought Randall might be up and about. There could be something he knew that would give me some clue about Debbie Shaw. Mr. Randall.
Who are you?
I wondered if you could spare me a few minutes to talk.
No, I don't know you.
My name's Boyd, Mr. Randall. I think you could help me, and maybe I could help you.
I don't need any help. What do you want to talk about?
I want to talk to you about Debbie, Debbie Shaw.
They sent you from a hospital?
No, no, I'm nothing to do with the hospital.
The police?
No, no. It says on here what I am. I'm an intelligence officer.
What's Debbie? I don't understand.
Can I come in and explain?
You want a snifter?
No, thanks, no. Just a chat.
Oh, you just chat away, pal. I'll be listening.
Would you like me to make you a coffee?
You want to sober me up? Is that it?
I've read the report you gave to a special branch, Mr. Randall. They seem to be keeping her in hospital a long time. I'm a bit worried about it.
Join the club, old man. I'm out of my bloody mind with worry, but there's nothing I can do. Not a relative, they say.
Hasn't she got any relatives at all?
Nary a one. Nary a one.
Did you know that she's being held on a Section 72?
What's a Section 72?
It means that she can be held indefinitely in a mental institution and that she has ceased to be a voluntary patient. Now, there's no appeal against such an order, and only the Home Secretary can vary it.
Why are they doing this to her?
That's what I want to find out.
How can I help?
I don't know. I just want to talk to you, about her. Every detail you can remember.
Why are you interested?
I want to talk to Debbie myself. I think she could help me with something I'm investigating. You're the next best thing.
You know, just ask me anything you like.
How did she first contact the hospital?
We were watching a film on TV. Dr. Zhivago. She had a turn. It was like she'd lost her memory. I was very worried. And then we were buying fruit in Berwick Street Market one day, and she had it again. Mm-hmm. She thought she was in some foreign country. She was like that for several hours.
Any idea what triggered it off that second time? Did anything happen?
It was hard to tell. The place was crowded. But there was a stall selling Chinese food. Takeaways. Mm. He called out in Chinese to somebody. Mm. I wondered if it was that.
And?
Well, I was worried. I made an appointment to see a psychiatrist, a proper doctor in Harley Street, and told him what had happened. He said he couldn't advise me, only her. He arranged for her to see a specialist at this hospital. And that was it. She's still there.
What did they tell you that first day?
She needed treatment. Nothing much. She'd be out in 2 or 3 days. All very matey and helpful. When it stretched out to 10 days and I started kicking up a fuss, they started being formal. I got no rights. I wasn't a relative or next of kin, so they couldn't divulge any information. I wrote her letters, but I never got a reply.
How important is she to you, Mr. Randall?
Nobody's ever mattered to me like she does. I'll do anything to help her, anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm lost without it. I think about it all day long. I'm going round the twist, I really am.
I talked for nearly 4 hours with Steve Randall, trying to put the pieces together. The girl obviously meant so much to him, and on his own he was beginning to go to pieces. Like they said, he wasn't a relative, so he had no standing. He'd shown me a picture of Debbie. She was very pretty. Kind of innocent and sexy at the same time, a touch of Marilyn Monroe. And there was a picture of them together on a boat, squinting into the sun. I've got a picture like that of Katie and me at Bosham. It was all rather depressing. I liked Steve Randall, and I came away determined to find out what was going on.
In the 8th episode of Pay Any Price by Ted Albury, you heard Barry Foster as Jimmy Boyd and Robert Beatty as Otto Schultz. Dr. Ansell was played by David Hobbs, Katie by Carol Boyd, Steve Randall by David Banks, and the CIA operator by Alex Jennings. The serial is directed by Christopher Venning.